At the time of making this video, there are reports of explosions near the Isfahan nuclear complex in Iran. Now, Iran has denied that these explosions are the result of an attack by the Israelis or the Americans. In fact, they say it's an exercise, very similar, coincidentally, to an exercise that was conducted back in April. But apparently, this type of thing happens often. The reason why I say that is right now, the Iranian government has requested that international airlines divert their flights around the country due to ongoing GPS jamming and electronic warfare currently being waged in anticipation of the vaunted retaliatory strikes on the Israelis, or possibly even a preemptive strike on Iran's nuclear facilities by the Israelis. We can surmise that the shit is going to hit the fan soon, if the markets are any indicator. Now, we're going to get into all of the tactical minutiae, as well as give you my own strategic analysis of what the hell is going on, how the collapsing economy ties in here. All I got to say is that if you look around the world, if you haven't noticed, everything is just collapsing. Venezuela, you know, complete disarray. You have a government there not recognized now by the United States officially, who is in power. Don't forget about those Russian warships and submarines that just graced the east coast of the United States recently. Don't forget about the collapsing government in Bangladesh, a country of 170 million people. The prime minister, who has now been exiled from the country, they've overtaken the parliament. And if you thought January 6th was bad, take a look at Bangladesh if you want to see what a real coup looks like, okay? Nigeria, protests in the streets, the most populous nation in Africa. Massive protests unfolding there right now. You have race and religious riots, unprecedented in the UK. I've never seen something like this, not only never seen, but just seen it so under-publicized is a real scary thing here. So everything is breaking. This is the age of consequences, what we preppers have been warning people about for the longest time. And here it is. I don't even have anything, you know, ill to speak of the incredulous people who, for the longest time, persistently trolled the channel saying that nothing bad is ever going to happen. Because at this point in time, you know, I was joking with a buddy, I should just come on here and smoke a cigar just for 10 minutes and just say nothing, because we're here. This is it. Now, which is not to say that there's not going to be some bull trap tomorrow, and the Nikkei futures trading is already showing that there's going to be a bounce, but it's going to be a dead cat bounce, okay? The markets are toxic. The markets are frail. They're a dead man walking. If you want to understand what's happened in the last 48 hours, we're going to get into all the tactical nuclear minutiae, the Israelis going into the nuclear bunker, all that stuff in just a moment. If you wanted to know, this is a propaganda campaign by the Iranian government to add more intensity to the vaunted retaliatory strike that everybody's anticipating. Now, to understand the market situation, you can imagine Western markets as a geriatric individual on, maybe not on life support. Let's look at it as a geriatric individual who has no known chronic health problems, okay? All it takes, and typically how old people die, is they get an injury. And that injury, because they don't have the right immune system anymore and their bodies just don't have the resilience that they once did, that ultimately being the thing that spirals out of control and takes them out. So they break a hip, they get a cold or something like that, something that when you're younger, you could fend off. Another way of looking at it is the markets are like a forest that should have probably burned down a long time ago were it not for firefighting intervention practices, prescribed burns. Okay, you can equate this with like the Federal Reserve or various financial institutions, the Treasury Department. They've put in place these interventions which have caused standing dead timber forests, which probably would have burned out a long time ago in small controllable fires, to now just be there waiting for some massive conflagration to take them out. they're attributing the most recent market crash. They're actually calling it a market crash, which is surprising, the euphemism that the mainstream media uses nowadays. They're attributing it to essentially a scheme whereby you borrow at a low interest rate and then you invest that into something that's going to generate a better return. So in this case, it was the Japanese yen. People were borrowing it at a low interest rate. They were putting it into U.S. equities, which were generating better returns. Well, the bubble just popped. This is the exact same thing that happened in 1929 in the United States, only now it's on an international Forex scale. So essentially, something has to break at some point. And we're only at the beginning of this. Remember, even at the current stage now, the markets are still more overvalued even after this correction than they were in 1929. So the crash hasn't even started yet. That's the real scary part. There is still time, okay? This could be the last chance that people have to get out. Now, I'm not going to give you any financial advice in that respect, but if you've seen that crazy rug pull of Bitcoin, people trying to cover their shorts, trying to cover their losses, that was insane to see billions of dollars liquidated within a matter of minutes. Everything was crashing. We're living in an unprecedented time on almost every dimension. The NASDAQ, the largest intraday loss ever recorded, over 1,000 points in the NASDAQ. There was a time when the NASDAQ itself as a whole was around 1,000, if you remember. I'm that old, actually, to remember that. I wasn't a trader at the time, but I was alive. So it's just crazy to see that it's not going to take much. It's going to take a swift breeze to blow the old man over. He's going to break a hip, and that's going to be the end of it. Okay, we're on the way out. And all of these crises that we're seeing flare up around the world, very reminiscent of 2008, only now we have way more debt. The world is on the brink of nuclear war on multiple fronts, and both sides are increasingly more dug in, and now we live in a, I would say it's not really multipolar, but it's bipolar. It's back to a cold war. So that's the difference between now and 2008. Now you have a full-on cold war in the midst of hot wars flaring up everywhere. I mean, I should just be smoking a cigar for 10 minutes straight. Let's just think about what's happened here, okay? Netanyahu goes to give the speech a couple weeks ago, gets the 58 standing ovations, that's the rallying cry for war. Everybody supports it. Then, of course, the assassination of Haniyeh ensues in Iran, which they could have did anywhere else. They chose to do it in Iran because they wanted to provoke an Iranian response. Now, they're hunkering down for a retaliatory strike in their doomsday bunkers, okay? What do their doomsday bunkers look like? This is their main doomsday bunker that they're currently, that they've opened up for the first time in 20 years for use. Now they're awaiting U.S. military support. So right now, this is what it looks like in the Middle East in terms of U.S. assets. So you have a lot of U.S. assets in the Middle East. You have the Roosevelt Carrier Strike Group moving beyond the Strait of Hormuz. It's unclear as to whether or not they're going to stick around there to protect this region in the case that all hell breaks loose between Iran, because of course this passageway for ships transporting, what is it, like 20% of the world's oil is going to be in jeopardy, and that of course will cause a massive blow up in the price of oil, barring we don't go to full-blown nuclear war. Before that time, it's presumed that they're going to head more further out to sea to be out of range of Iranian missiles. Of course, they're never going to be fully out of range because Iran has long-range missile capability, but the further away you can be, the less accurate Iran is going to be capable of being. Now, as they're awaiting more military support to come, and I have insider information about what you can expect with American military deployments in the next few months, now they're contemplating a preemptive strike because, of course, all of this hype about an Iranian counteroffensive is having an attritional effect on the Israeli economy because everybody has to hunker down, it's on lockdown. Right now, they have hospitals being built, as you can see here, in underground parkades. This all costs money. This is hurting their economy, okay? And a great image, where do I have the image here? This is a great image to contrast. So right now, you have the Israeli war cabinet on, what would that be? Would that be your right? I guess that would be your right. On your right, looking at meeting with the Americans, and then on your left, you have the general of the, or the chief of the Iranian forces meeting with Sergei Shoigu, the former Minister of Defense of Russia, now been promoted. I don't know if you call that a promotion. Some people would. We'll get into the details of that. But basically been promoted to the Chief of Security or some title like that. So anyways, very high up there, okay, to send this guy out is saying something. Now, so what you have here is Russia putting its pieces on the table, right? And saying that, look, we can give you S-400s, we can give you advanced radar systems, we can give you electronic warfare equipment, and you can tell by the body language here that both sides are equally interested in this conversation, which suggests that both have something to benefit. The question is, why haven't Russia extended the nuclear umbrella to Iran just yet? Of course, this would be in contravention to UN agreements that indicate that you can't share nuclear weapons, which hasn't stopped numerous countries, rogue countries, from doing it. Of course, Israel has nuclear weapons, undeclared nuclear weapons. The Russians sharing them with the Belarusians. And we can presume that the Americans would, in a heartbeat, share their nuclear weapons with any other NATO country where there is currently existing deployment systems. So this is very important because Russia stands to benefit from a war in the Middle East because, of course, that's going to divert attention away from what's happening in Ukraine. Look at all the warships and the personnel and material that have to be diverted to that region in order to defend against an Iranian attack. So the Russians want to embolden the Iranians to make a big move. They're saying, hey, we're going to give you the means to defend your facilities, your nuclear facilities. Now, the question is this all just a red herring? Okay, and this is where maybe I'm getting a little too analytical too soon in the video, but in order to just organize my thoughts on the matter, we have to talk about this. Is it possible that Iran doesn't even care about their nuclear facilities, and that this is all just a red herring, a ruse, in the sense that Iran could likely get nuclear weapons if it wanted to now, let's face it, from North Korea, okay, from Pakistan, from Russia, possibly even from China, if they really wanted to negotiate for nuclear weapons. And the question is, does Israel even have the capability to get that deep into the nuclear facilities that Iran has? Okay, so is this, the question is, can Israel deal a strategic blow to Iran, which is going to be significant enough to justify and make worthwhile the obvious retaliation that's going to come from Iran? Is this really truly just about keeping Netanyahu in power and keeping a perpetual state of war going so that he doesn't get, there's still protests in Israel, even in the thick of all this, there's still protests against Netanyahu. So is this all about one man preserving his own position of power and not going to jail? Or is there truly some 4D chess move here that we're not seeing? Do they truly believe that they can dethrone Iran? Another potential benefit to the Russians is that if Iran does fall and succumb to Israel and the United States, that's one more place that they need to position their defensive weapons. But the question is, the big question that people should be asking is, does Russia have the conventional capability to defend Iran at this point in time? And I've been having debates with people about this very thing. The idea that Russia just has S-400 systems to spare right now, I think, is being overly generous to the view that Russia has a limitless supply of material and weaponry because they have a massive border that they have to defend. The attacks against their infrastructure ramping up every day. Now, on a daily basis, you're seeing between 50 to 100 Ukrainian drones striking inside Russian territory before one of these strikes, just one, would have made the news. Okay, so there's a cost-benefit analysis that Russia has to weigh. So we give Iran these systems that Iran can use against the Israelis and the Americans, but what does that take away from us? Is the juice worth the squeeze? I would say that it is. However, one thing that costs the Russians nothing is the extension of the nuclear umbrella, some sort of military partnership that says, if you nuke Iran, if you attack Iran's nuclear facilities, then we have this arrangement where we come mutual assistance group, if you want to call it that, between the Russians and the Iranians, that if Iran is attacked, that Russia will come to their aid. Now, it's a very sticky situation there with Israel, where there's still very convoluted levels of diplomacy. But what I'm trying to say, it'd be very easy for the Russians to just say, here's some nuclear weapons. Okay, and that would actually have the effect of creating a balance of power in the region, because this would prevent Israel from wanting to attack Iran. Now, would it call back Iran's proxies? No, it wouldn't. In fact, it would probably embolden the Iranians even more. So herein lies the problem. This is why it's an implacable situation. We're going to see escalation. The Iranians have no choice. They have to strike, because right now, what's happening is the Israelis are threatening to do a preemptive strike, knowing that the Iranians are maybe on the fence a little bit. So they're saying to themselves, maybe we need to preempt the Iranians from striking us back, which of course will compel the Iranians to perhaps more haphazardly strike the Israelis and do it less strategically. So what's going to happen then if they... This is where we really, this situation gets very confusing. Right now, Israel is saying we are going to preempt, or we are considering preempting Iran's retaliatory strike if they take that approach. Now, they're saying the only way that they're going to do this is if they have intelligence that suggests that Iran absolutely is guaranteed to be planning something. So they could just make something up if they wanted to. This would compel Iran to react. And it's very, there seems to be very little off-ramps here, because Iran has said that they're not interested in any sort of negotiation. You're not seeing the telegraphing of their intentions as you did in April. They're being very secretive. And the thing to understand, that the reason why you're not seeing any missiles on the roadways, any military equipment, is because it's for real this time. It's because Iran is genuinely getting ready to conduct a real strike on Israel. And it's as simple as rolling their missiles out of the bunker, the subterranean complexes, which are vast and incredibly deep and impenetrable to most conventional ordnance, at least. They can just wheel it out and fire at will, because this is a long-range war. It's not like where you need to move troops and tanks and artillery here and there, which is very easy to see from a satellite. This is something which they basically open up the bunkers, they fire the missiles. Israel maybe has between minutes to hours to get prepared, and that's it. So there is no telegraphing, okay? So this is very important to understand, that I think this is real this time, and they're going to do it. Is the market breaking related or attributable to what's happening in the Middle East? I don't even necessarily think so. I just think that everything is breaking at the same time. Everything has just reached a critical mass. And the thing that is causing the war between Israel and Iran in the first place is the same rapacious greed that caused our markets to do what they did in the last 48 hours. The same thing that fueled that, the mania, is what's fueling this. It's just a level of irrationality infused into economics and politics and finance, which has brought us to this point where we're at right now. Let me see, where should we go from here? Let's get into the nitty-gritty. So right now on Flight Radar, we're still seeing a lot of flights transit the country of Iran, as you can see. So obviously not all have abandoned that flight corridor, if you will. So this tells us that the likelihood of a strike tonight, which would be tonight in Iran, it's probably morning there now, is very unlikely. However, you know, what they're planning could completely blindside people and they could do something during the day. I mean, what's the difference really going to be anyways, besides perhaps the benefit of, you know, the concealment of night? Is that even a factor anymore in terms of modern missile defense? I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on that particular issue. So in terms of what's going on in Israel, so they have this bunker complex. For the first time in decades, Shin Bet, that's the Israeli security agency, has opened the underground nuclear shelter in Jerusalem, known as the Doomsday Bunker, which is going to house the country's top political leadership and officials of the defense of the security complex, a sign that Israel is preparing for war that is going to be large scale and have unknown ramifications. Of course, Israel is a small country. There is a nuclear facility there, the Dimona nuclear facility, which of course could be a target. Again, this would be a violation of the Geneva Convention for Iran to target it. And you might say, well, does Iran care about Geneva Conventions? I would say yes. Clearly, they're still engaged in high-level diplomacy with even Western nations like Hungary. So, and you can say what you want about Hungary. They're a black sheep in NATO, you could say. But regardless, they still have a reputation to uphold. And they're clearly not a rogue state in the typical sense of the word. So I don't think that they're just going to start opening up on the Dimona nuclear facility. But that is something that Israel has to factor into its strategic calculus, is that they are, in fact, sitting ducks. And if Iran does have nuclear weapons or has nuclear parity with Israel, it's over for Israel, because they have, what, 1/6 the population. They have arguably greater states of division and unrest within the country. They have a smaller country. It is less defensible, arguably. And they're surrounded by, you know, countries that are their adversaries. So this is why Israel apparently is considering a preemptive strike, but I don't see what good that would do in this particular instance, except piss off the Iranians even more and give them more, galvanize their population, more fuel to galvanize their population against Israel in the United States. If anything, if you're Iran right now, you're thinking, yes, please do target us again to give us, you know, more fuel that we need. And I spoke about this recently in a video I did, that Iran stands to benefit from these attacks because Iran is quite divided right now. But nothing unites a country more than an external threat, a war. So if Iran has that external threat, despite the fact that they may be being struck by the Israelis and it might be embarrassing, it still has a unifying effect. And of course, Iran just recently put in what they claim was a, and what appeared to be on the surface anyways, a more moderate politician willing to work within the West's paradigm and framework for having a revisiting the JCPOA and a nuclear-free Iran. And basically, Israel just shut that down completely. Okay, so the Iranians put on this spectacle, if you can call it that, for peace, in that they replaced the president, shot his helicopter down, some people saying it was an inside job, who knows, and they put in place this guy who's more moderate, selected by the people, supposedly. And so they tried, and Israel said, no, we want to go to war. So we're going to war. That's what's going on. This is a image of that explosion in Isfahan, Iran. Again, Iran is saying that this is the location of a military facility near the Isfahan nuclear complex, which they do this type of exercise rather regularly, but I'm not so sure about that. This is Sergei Shoigu meeting with the, I believe it's the Iranian defense minister or foreign minister, I'm not sure exactly, or the counterpart, the chief, what would you call him? I guess the equivalent would be like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or something. Anyways, meeting in Iran, clearly a very distinguished high-level meeting discussing what we can presume would be the delivery of weapon systems. After this particular meeting, Shoigu flew to Azerbaijan, which of course would be one of the weak points of access into Iran. I don't have a map up at the moment. I guess I can show you on flight radar here. So if we go to flight radar, Azerbaijan is right up here. Okay, then you have the Caspian Sea. So a pathway for Israel to access, or for the Americans even to access, get close to Tehran would potentially be the Caspian Sea and the Azerbaijan route. So rumor has it that Shoigu went there after his meeting with the Iranians to say, don't even think about trying to intervene in that direction. This is a video of an explosion at an Iranian oil and gas facility. So these types of things have been happening quite often. There are what the Iranians refer to as terrorist cells, and I guess you can't argue with them if they're blowing up their infrastructure. These types of things are not uncommon in certain parts of Iran. Iran is a vast country, a very large country of 80 million people. They have a lot of enemies, various sectarian violence that ensues, as is the case with much of the Middle East, and Iran is not immune from that. And who knows, was this saboteurs who were backed by the Mossad? Nobody knows, but I think we're going to see more and more of what we've seen in Russia, or what we are seeing on a daily basis, start to unfold in Iran as well, and that's going to compel Iran to enter into a direct conflict with the Israelis. But keep in mind, when Iran, if Iran does decide to respond, and this is the thing to understand, right now it's been very, very quiet, okay? Yemen has been incredibly quiet. The Iraqi resistance groups have been incredibly quiet. With the exception of today, there were 5 American soldiers who are injured. Even in Lebanon, they've been quite quiet lately. And it seems as though they're amassing for a very large attack. And what I think is going to happen, if these groups are as coordinated as we've been led to believe, what you would want to do first is overwhelm the Iron Dome by using Lebanese rockets, perhaps ones that are less expensive, not as capable. First, deplete the Iron Dome systems. Make it appear as though that is the big attack, and then start getting Yemen to fire its stuff at the same time. And then once, you know, everything has been exhausted or stressed, then that's when Iran launches its actual attack, okay? So I can see that being the way that this unfolds. At least that's how it would unfold if we presume that these groups are as unified as we're led to believe right now. So Iran has decided to attack Israel, according to Foreign Minister Katz. This is confirmed by the Hungarian Foreign Minister as well. This was the Iranian Foreign Minister, I believe, told the Hungarian Foreign Minister that they do intend, in fact, on attacking Israel. So it's pretty much locked in. Now, Trump, in a live stream with Aiden Ross, of all people, I just don't understand how, I mean, I do, because we're idiots, but you know how these Twitch streamers are garnering the attention of politicians. Now, I understand you want to, you know, spread the message to those who are in a position of influence, but this is, if this isn't a testament to the idiocracy that we live in, that people like Aiden Ross, okay, are platforming potential presidential candidates, front runners, in fact, then there's not much hope for this Western experiment. That's all I can say. Anyways, Trump was saying that he thought that the attack was going to come tonight. I'm not sure why there's a picture of Kim Jong-un here. Perhaps that's foreshadowing in the story that we're going to talk about. But, of course, that did not happen. So something to keep in mind that even Trump is not entirely in the loop. Okay, so here's that Isfahan nuclear facility that I was referring to. Something to keep in mind is that in order for Israel to conduct these operations against Iran, they have to utilize the airspace of countries surrounding them. And Iran has basically said that if you allow Israel to use that airspace, then we are going to hold you accountable and likely unleash our proxies on your critical infrastructure. So if Saudi Arabia allows Iran to either Israel to use Saudi Arabia airspace to attack Iran, or even allows the defense of Iranian missiles that are destined for Israel, then Iran is saying that they are going to hold Saudi Arabia accountable if they intervene in any way. And we know that, as was the case with the Yemen-Saudi Arabia war, or the war between the Houthis and Saudi Arabia, I should say, the Houthis have the ability to reach out and touch pretty much all the major oil and gas infrastructure inside Saudi Arabia and throughout the Middle East. So if Saudi Arabia intervenes, the price of oil could potentially skyrocket very high, unless this quickly unravels into a global crisis where we have all wars flare up simultaneously. And it could very well happen. Now, we're going to get back to this, but I want to share some insider information with you, okay? According to my sources, right now, the military orders for various provisions, get a load of this, okay? And this is 100% fact. You can take this to the bank. However, it's going to be difficult. It's probably open source information. You would have to go and investigate, but you could, you know, get stuff to verify what I'm about to say. Right now, a company that supplies the U.S. military is saying that the largest order they've ever had, okay, which was, I believe it was last year, late last year, if not early this year, I actually made a video about it because at the time it seemed like big news. It seemed like, you know, the U.S. military was really preparing for something. Well, I made a dedicated video about that. And if this doesn't speak to how fast things are escalating, I don't know what does. This new order placed by the U.S. military is 6 times the volume and in 1/5 the time. 6 times the volume and in 1/5 the time. That is insane. That means they are preparing for a massive deployment. They are preparing for a massive war. Just wanted to let you guys know that. If you needed any more motivation to prep, I don't see how you could at this point, but some people still do. It should be reiterated that Iran's explanation for the assassination differs from what the New York Times is saying. Iran continues to assert that the assassination was carried out by a short-range projectile with a warhead of about 7 kilograms. The New York Times claims that it was the work of a bomb, sabotage. Now, the Iranians have arrested dozens of people in connection to this act of sabotage, and I guess they'll get to the bottom of it at some point, but it's important to know that there is a distinct difference there between how the West is reporting on this and how Iran is reporting on it. I originally thought that because this guy was not necessarily Iranian and that the Iranians wouldn't respond that aggressively, but it appears as though, obviously, this is more than just a sign of you're taking out the leader of Hamas. It's saying that you don't care to negotiate whatsoever. And then to do it on Iranian soil is, of course, an insult of the highest order in Islamic countries, from what I'm told. So according to sources, Russia is going to start delivering advanced radar and air defense equipment to Iran. This is according to two Iranian officials, and that is from the New York Times. So I know I just disagreed with the New York Times, but, you know, they're still the New York Times, right? So they're right half the time, it does appear. Talked about Shoigu's visit, talked about Saudi Arabia. Iran has warned other countries, including Jordan, Kuwait, Iraq, Qatar, and the UAE, that if they attempt to intervene in their response against Israel, they will be also targeted as well. What else do we got? Okay, let's flip through the screens here, and then we'll talk about Russia. So this is just a scene at Lebanon. They're getting prepared. They're accepting various medical and looks like medical supplies in anticipation of a major conflict. Yemen shot down yet another Reaper drone. This is Zelensky talking about the F-16s. So the F-16s have now officially entered the combat zone, which means NATO is now, for all intents and purposes, at war with the Russians. And what's concerning is that they're already talking about equipping these things with long-range weapon systems. Now, they're showing some pilots here. This guy is has his face covered. I don't know why that's necessary. But, okay, I mean, I understand why to a degree, but it also, of course, adds to the argument that it's not going to be Ukrainian pilots flying these planes. It is likely going to be American or NATO pilots who've been training for this their whole lives, and of course we'll never be able to tell. This is likely all just for show right here. The concerning thing is, though, is that they're going to be equipped with modernized equipment, and of course this is a nuclear capable platform, with many hardliners in the Russian government already suggesting that these are going to be equipped with nuclear weapons potentially and used against Russia proper. I think that's quite unlikely, but if the infrastructure exists, then, you know, they could pull the trigger. It's like a turnkey situation where, as they might not have nuclear weapons right now, but if they've mastered and become proficient in the deployment systems, which of course what an F-16 would be, then they could easily, quickly modify them for nuclear war. On the topic of nuclear war, I'd encourage you to watch my most recent video, which is a quick 10-minute expose on the whole nuclear winter hypothesis and why it's been thoroughly debunked. Governments of the world are preparing for nuclear war. Not only is nuclear war more possible now than ever before in human history, it's also more likely. During the peak of the Cold War, when there were 70,000 nuclear weapons, they were less accurate. They likely caused more radiation. They weren't as tuned in and dialed in because we didn't have the type of technology and guidance systems that we have today. So all of this makes mutually assured destruction even more elusive and less likely. So if anything, right now, nuclear winter hypothesis, if you go and watch that video, you'll come to find that it's been grossly exaggerated. And right now, I would say that there is a potential for the use of tactical nuclear weapons in a way that would not necessarily run up the escalation ladder to all-out nuclear war. Because you have these different theaters of conflict where you could actually have a potential use for a tactical nuclear weapon, which might not trigger an all-out run up the escalation ladder in a strategic sense. So I would encourage people to be a bit more skeptical of a lot of these. I don't want to call them charlatans, because some of them are very educated people, like Annie Jacobson, incredibly educated, obviously has a lot of connections, but she's wrong about the nuclear winter hypothesis, that is going to be a deterrent for countries. The Russians know it, the Chinese know it, that these are not necessarily real facts, in the sense that nuclear winter is a foregone conclusion. In fact, you know, they're calling it nuclear fall. Researchers that had challenged the original nuclear winter hypothesis, and I go into it in that video, basically say that nuclear winter, the effects would be quite mild compared to what a lot of the doomsayers are saying. And this, of course, incentivizes countries to go to nuclear war with each other, knowing that it's not necessarily the doomsday scenario it's been painted out to be, which is not to say it wouldn't be. It would be a doomsday scenario. It just means that, you know, life will still endure thereafter. All life on Earth is not going to be wiped out. It's not going to be a road-type situation. It's not even going to be a road warrior situation. It is going to be a situation where you're going to have the breakdowns of governments and collapsing supply chains and probably maybe 10% of the population is immediately taken out, and then maybe another 50% is lost over time due to the collapsed supply chain. But it will be survivable, especially if you are prepared, and that the Russians and the Chinese and our adversarial countries, who are aware that this is just hypothetical, have been promoting the idea of nuclear winter in our society so that we don't prepare and we just assume that mutually assured destruction and the risk of it insulates anything from ever truly escalating. Sorry for that tangent there. This is in the UK right now. Things are spiraling out of control. Not sure how they're going to rein that one in. In North Korea, this is crazy. I mean, where are the North Koreans getting? You got to ask, where the hell are they getting the money for this stuff? 250 launchers, okay? Not sure if I have any notes about this here. I just have the images. 250, I believe these are short to medium range launchers. Obviously, if they're fighting the South Koreans, they don't need them to go very far, but these are nuclear capable launchers. I mean, look at this equipment. This is, I mean, billions of dollars worth of equipment. Clearly, they're getting help from the Chinese. Why do they need this, and why are they deploying it towards the border is the question. So they are getting their tactical nuclear weaponry prepared. And remember, North Korea has one of the most extensive underground networks of tunnel systems and nuclear-proof bunkers in the world. In the UK, or in Australia, I should say, in response to what's happening in the UK, they're concerned that the terrorist threat has gone from probable to likely. So they're getting ready to have unrest in Australia as well. They're going to refer to it as terrorism. I think all of this xenophobic sentiment that is developing in Western countries is going to likely be used to fuel public opinion for a war in the Middle East. This is the Bangladeshian Parliament building, which is overrun by protesters. Complete nationwide internet blackout there for the last 2 weeks. Crazy shit going down. This I just thought was interesting, you know, just to give you a sense of how far technology has come. And this is barely scratching the surface, because they can do this from space. There were drones that surveilled areas and do constant real-time surveillance of entire cities. But this is just a sense of, so this is a stadium, and there's a camera there that uses facial identification, facial recognition technology, to basically see everybody in the stadium at the same time. Now, I personally would never go to one of these stadiums to watch a sporting event. I think it's a colossal waste of time. But just something for you to remember, that Big Brother is out there and he is watching. He's watching all of us. This is the Fed funds rate, which is now at lows not seen since the 2008 recession. The Fed's funds rate is not the same as the mortgage rates. It's the rates at which banks lend each other money. And it's now, this is one of the main predictors of a recession. So as you can see, every recession, whether it was in the early or the late 80s, the dot-com bubble, the 2008, and to a lesser extent, COVID, the Fed funds rate drastically was lowered prior to a recession or even a depression. So right now it's approaching, what is it, like 1.63%. So that's pretty low. And that indicates that, I mean, as if we needed any more economic indicators to support the speculation that the markets are going to crash and crash hard and keep crashing, I should say. We had this massive sell-off in tech, 1,000 points off the NASDAQ in but one day. I presume there's going to be a dead cat bounce, but if there isn't, it's going to be a lot of people jumping out of windows, man. Where is gold at? So gold, despite being down relative to everything else, has remained relatively stable. I mean, if you look at gold compared to the NASDAQ of all things, let's just see how futures are doing. Has the futures opened yet? So futures are up, as was expected, based on what's happening with the Nikkei and the Asian markets. So we're going to see a bounce tomorrow. I don't think it's going to be as significant a bounce as we've seen on the downside. Of course, the Dow was down 1,000 points today, which is insane. The S&P down 3%, which is absolutely crazy. But it could fall a lot more than it is right now. So gold has held up. Of course, crypto hasn't done that good. I presume people are buying crypto once again. The Bit Bros are jumping back in once again. Some people just never learn. But hey, the volatility index, the highest it's been since COVID. In fact, intraday, it was higher. It was the highest it's ever been in intraday before retracing downwards. Where are we in this cycle? I don't know where we are in the cycle. Some people say we're in the first sell-off, and that we got a long way to go yet. That's what everybody wants to believe. But how do you know we're just not in the delusion phase and that we've hit the first trap? I think we're here, okay? Because if you look at a graph of the NASDAQ over the last 25 years, it looks exactly like this. I think, you know, new paradigm, AI, NVIDIA, Tesla, all that stuff, and it crashed. And then we have some denial. We're going to see that tomorrow. That's going to be the bull trap. Everything's returning to normal. Then maybe Iran's going to strike. It's going to be the real deal. Middle East wars are going to flare up. There's going to be some rug pull. And that's exactly what it was. I mean, I was thinking, like what is it that suddenly caused this? They're saying, it was the unemployment rate that went up by 0.2%. Really? The unemployment rate going up by 0.2%? Is what caused the global markets to nearly crash or go into a massive correction territory? I don't think so. I don't think so. That doesn't make any sense. And of course, yes, it was the carry trade with the yen. But even that seems like it cannot explain the extent of this crash. It seems as though this was all foreseen. There's a reason why Warren Buffett has been accumulating money like crazy to record levels, $250 billion over the last year. There's a reason why Jeff Bezos has been selling his stock, because they all know what's coming. Speaking of people who know what's coming, BlackRock, the company, and I don't usually talk about them, but it was brought to my attention that they own a significant amount of Ukraine now. And so I was reading an article on a Russian media source, which was talking about how we're not only at war with the United States now, but we're now at war with these supranational, transnational corporations like BlackRock. So BlackRock now has a vested interest in protecting their investment, which is Ukraine. So does that mean that we're going to see more private mercenaries like Blackwater used to fulfill in Ukraine that are conscripted by BlackRock to fight on Ukraine and NATO's behalf? Is NATO going to start to bring in a Wagner group of their own? So this is what Russia is concerned about right now, that a third of Ukrainian arable land is currently owned or managed by BlackRock, because of course they don't necessarily own these things, just like people say, well, BlackRock owns this company and that company. They usually own a disproportionate amount of shares in one of those countries, companies in this instance, which gives them a lot of control over how the company is run. So I find that interesting. So the Russians are saying the war will not be with the United States of America, but with the supranational financial octopuses whose tentacles control the parsley in Washington and Brussels. There you have it, guys. The time to prepare is years ago. The next best time to prepare was last year. The best time to prepare, from our point of view, is right now. So you can gear up at CanadianPreparedness.com. Go check out the food links in the description below if you want to get yourself some freeze-dried wholesale food from our friend Steve Syros, some of the best freeze-dried wholesale food in the industry. They do things that no other company can do to a quality that no other company likes to strive towards. And if you need any preparedness items whatsoever, go to CanadianPreparedness.com. We got you covered entirely. I'm at a point where I'm almost at a loss for words for how to break the situation down, because it's stuff that we've been warning about and now it's happening. And I guess as preppers, we just sit back and wait until it hits our doorstep, and that's when we got to jump into action, and that's why we prep. Thanks for watching, folks. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. Canadian Prepper out.